Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome, everybody. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred. And we're going to be filled with guests. We got our very own Abraham Hamilton III we're going to turn to in just a moment. But I will introduce him. Good morning to you, Abe.
Good morning. Good morning.
We're going to be talking about the prosecution slash persecution of the former president of the United States here in just a minute. But then we also have Dr. Jessica Peck, who will be on in about 10 minutes or so. And she's host of a podcast on AFR. She is a brilliant lady. And at 10:30, Dr. Frank Harbor, we're going to be talking about dangers facing the church and defending your faith, those kinds of things. So, but first, Fred, we have had a tough spring. A lot of people have in terms of storms and tornadoes. What's the latest?
Many areas in southeastern United States and some to the north have been suffering through and still recovering or trying to recover from tornadoes. But the latest news is a tornado that hit around 4 o'clock this morning in southeastern Missouri. In particular, we're told Bollinger County, which is about 50 miles south of St. Louis. Authorities there are saying multiple deaths, multiple injuries. There's still a lot of details to dig out here. Officials saying there's the damage is extremely widespread. Search and rescue crews are on the scene trying to use chainsaws to cut back trees and brush to reach homes. But you can imagine 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, a lot of folks in their houses, but extensive damage. And as I say, the Missouri State Highway Patrol saying multiple injuries and multiple deaths. So be praying for those folks.
And a lot of storms coming, sweeping across the country again, coming up here in a day or so.
It's been a tough spring, a really tough spring for this. So, and as I say, so many people still recovering.
Right.
Crews, Samaritan's Purse, 8 Days of Hope. Many others are trying to help out these dear folks who have suffered through just two Fridays in a row, basically.
Right.
Two Friday evenings in a row. And now this one this morning.
Okay. Well, folks, be praying for those in Missouri. I know that a lot of you are praying for those who have already, as Fred said, already suffered in back-to-back weekends around the country. All right. Well, Fred, the reason we have Abe on, and by the way, folks, most of you know that Abe is our general counsel. He's our lead attorney, handles all things legal, but that background obviously serves him well as host of the Hamilton Corner, which is heard every weekday at 5 p.m. Central Time. But we wanted Abe to be on for 5-6 minutes, whatever, however long we'll be covering this subject, because the big story news-wise has happened in Manhattan, New York.
Yeah, yesterday. We knew this was coming, but it was still somewhat surreal to see it happening yesterday. The former president of the United States, Donald Trump, arriving at a courthouse in Manhattan where he was, as they say, processed, fingerprinted, and then the indictment unsealed against him. What we do know, he has pled not guilty to 34 counts of falsifying business records. The other player in this is the district attorney, Alvin Bragg, who has said for years, "I'm out to get Donald Trump." It was surreal in so many ways. From the time that the former president left Mar-a-Lago the other day, the helicopters capturing almost an O.J. Simpson scene of these vehicles taking him to the airport, and then arriving in New York and this parade of vehicles to Trump Tower, where he stayed Monday night, and then yesterday to the court, and then leaving the court and heading back to Mar-a-Lago, where the former President Trump had a rally last night. And if you think he's lost any of his defiance, think again. This is a little bit about what he had to say to the crowd last night in Mar-a-Lago, cut number 2.
The local failed district attorney
charging a former president of the United States for the first time in history on a basis that every single pundit and legal analyst said, there is no case. There's no case. They kept saying, there's no case.
Never thought it could happen in America. The only crime that I have committed is to fearlessly defend our nation from those who seek to destroy it. This is a persecution, not an investigation.
Letitia James vowed to use every area of the law to, quote, investigate President Trump and his business transactions. Those transactions are going to be investigated, she said. And that of her family and his family. Because we're going after his family, and we're going after them hard.
All right, that was President Trump last night in Mar-a-Lago. What's really interesting is the next hearing is December.
Yeah.
And,
hey, Abe.
Let's go to
so Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, says he's going to get the former president. Has he got him?
No. Okay. He hasn't come close to getting him. Because I am a fellow member of the bar, I'm an attorney, I am reluctant to say what I'm about to say. This is a laughable indictment. As you all know, I prosecuted major felonies for over a decade. I have literally done the exact same thing, drafted indictments, filed indictments, submitted the evidence before grand jury, seeing whether or not they will return a true bill or whether or not they would decline to indict, which would be a no bill. This is laughable, and it really could result, in my estimation, in Alvin Bragg facing some kind of bar complaint for prosecutorial misconduct. Where do I begin? First and foremost, the only purported crime or the purported statute in the indictment is New York State Penal Law Section 175-10, which is a misdemeanor, falsifying business records.
That's the only one mentioned?
It's the only statute mentioned in the entire indictment, all 34 counts. That's what should be noted first. In order for that misdemeanor to be elevated to a felony, you have to say that misdemeanor was committed in the furtherance of additional crime. Alvin Bragg did not identify an additional crime. I will read to you from the indictment. Count one, the defendant in the County of New York and elsewhere on or about February 14, 2017, with intent to defraud and intent to commit another crime and aid and conceal the commission thereof, made and caused a false entry in the business records of an enterprise, to wit, an invoice from Michael Cohen dated February 14, 2017, marked as a record of the Donald J. Trump Revocable Trust and kept and maintained by the Trump Organization. That's count one. So, referring to the misdemeanor statute referred to from New York state law, the statute of limitations is 2 years.
2 years.
All right. In order to elevate that misdemeanor into a felony, the statute of limitation is 5 years. All right. For the felony offense. Everybody should understand, first and foremost, well, not first, secondarily at this point, the felony that is alleged is described in the indictment as a first-degree felony. But people should pump their brakes because every state describes their laws differently. A first-degree felony in Louisiana is an egregious felony. A first-degree felony in New York is not an egregious. It's the opposite. This alleged felony offense is a Class E first-degree felony, which means that the sentence, at the maximum sentence that could be imposed, is no jail time. There's no jail time that's a possible sentence, even if a conviction is rendered. The sentence is probation from 1 1/3 years to 4 years. That's it. Now, this is coming from a district attorney, Alvin Bragg, who has reduced over 53% of felonies, including victim felonies, homicides of certain types, assaults, robberies, armed robberies, you know, battery. All of these things have been reduced from felonies to misdemeanors. Yet he's taking this allegation that has no jail time as a possibility, even in the felonious sense, and elevating it to a felony. Third thing that should be noted, that the entirety of the alleged criminality, the specified dates in the indictment, are February 14th, 2017. The latest date alleged is December 5th, 2017. Now,
so that's outside the statute of limitations?
I'm not a mathematician, but I did stay at a Holiday Inn one night. You know, you do a little subtraction. In April of 2023, even March of 2023, this is beyond 2 years following whatever purported events in 2017, and certainly beyond 5 years of whatever purported events in 2017. This is facially invalid. On its face, it's invalid. Last thing I'll say, and I'll be quiet for now. The indictment boasts 34 counts, all right? For those who may not understand, each count in an indictment is an allegation of a separate crime for which a charge party could be convicted. In this instance, and I want to explain this to listeners so they can see from the indictment, all of the charged criminality are from the same events in four different categories.
Yes.
The first category is the President Trump's organization receiving invoices from Michael Cohen. You want to tell me receiving an invoice is a crime? The second category is entering the invoice that you received from Michael Cohen into the organization's business records.
That's a separate.
That's a separate alleged crime. Then the third category is a check from President Trump from one account he controls, or a check from his account for his revocable trust. And I want to give you an example again from the indictment. Count one in the indictment. The defendant, on February 14, 2017, with intent to defraud and intent to commit another crime and aid and conceal the commission thereof, made and caused a false entry to the business records of an enterprise, to wit, an invoice from Michael Cohen dated February 14, 2017. That's a count. Count two, the same thing, to wit, an entry in the detailed general ledger for the Donald J. Trump Revocable Trust. My point is, Alvin Bragg is padding the indictment to try to make it seem like there is a host of criminality here, when he really is just describing the same three or four transactions, but describing every detail of the transaction, receiving the invoice from Michael Cohen, documenting the invoice in the company's general ledger, then a check cut on that. This is, as I said earlier, this borders on prosecutorial misconduct, because having done this numerous times, judges don't want to have to weed through a 34-count indictment and say, okay, what are you alleging here?
Right. So let me just ask you quickly, and then we'll go to Fred here, and then we'll let you go, Abe.
Okay.
All right. So you were in the prosecutor's office in both New Orleans area and the Houston, Texas area.
That's right. Okay. Harris County DA's office.
So is it unusual, and I have no idea what you're going to say, is it unusual for us to see what happened this week and then for the second hearing on a crime to come in, 8 months later in December, which oddly, ironically, surprisingly, shockingly, is the month before the New Hampshire primary for the GOP nomination?
I have to tell you, that is strange. Post-indictment, one of the things criminal court judges like to do is have an efficiency in their management of their dockets. To have a newly indicted case where you have a charged suspect who has surrendered, you normally would see the next court appearance in a month, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe 2 months. But to say, oh, yeah, okay, we have this case, it's docketed, and see you in December. That's strange, man. Yeah. That's strange.
Well, the other thing, Bragg recommended a trial in January. Gee, just when the caucuses and the primaries are starting. That's the other thing. But the other thing, Abe, in this, he alleges another crime.
Right.
But he's not telling anybody what
Without
the crime is.
The purpose of an indictment is to give formal notice to any charged party what exactly they've been charged with so that they can prepare any defense. Contrary to what Nancy Pelosi said, we're not in England where if you're charged with a crime, then you have the responsibility of proving yourself innocent. We have this Fifth Amendment thing. I don't know if you may have heard of it before.
Yes.
But as a defendant, you literally rest on the presumption of innocence. The burden of proof is entirely on the prosecution. And for a prosecutor to conceal the specifics of whatever crime he's charging also impinges upon President Trump's constitutional rights, because what exactly is he defending himself against if you don't articulate what the crime is in the indictment, the formal charging instrument?
All right. I hope you all understood that, folks. I'm getting the idea. I read the indictment last night, and boy, that was good reading.
Man,
I'm just going to tell you.
I talked about this at length last night on the Hamilton Corner, so if you want to grab that podcast, we'll go in detail through all 34 counts.
Something tells me we will have you back to discuss this, Abe. Hamilton, Abraham Hamilton III, folks. You can listen to his show weekdays at 5 p.m. Central Time here on American Family Radio. Thank you, Abe.
Take care, Abe.
All right. Well, we're going to go from one smart person to another smart person. We want to welcome Dr. Jessica Peck, who is host of the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast on AFR.net. I printed off her resume, and folks, I'm just going to tell you, this is impressive. She's a clinical professor at the Baylor University Louise Harrington School of Nursing. There's a bunch of other things under work and education. She is highly accomplished in her field. I can't even begin to go through her professional organizations and honors. She has written a parenting book because, folks, if you're a parent, you don't need help on raising your kids in America 2023. That book title is Behind Closed Doors, A Guide for Parents and Teens to Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. Also, Dr. Peck is a nationally recognized anti-human trafficking advocate. Whew, got through some of that. Jessica, welcome to today's issues.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, my youngest son, when I was picking him up from school not too long ago, I overheard him telling his friend, my mom is a famous nurse. And his friend said, oh, yeah, how do you know that? And he said, I asked Alexa.
so
that's the
up?
Standard.
Oh, okay.
Yes, and I guess Alexa could recognize me. So, you know, I have arrived in my children's eyes.
Wow. I bet you if you Google Dr. Nurse Mama, it'll be the only one that
yes,
probably so. So that's my professor brain, hands-on nursing experience, and heart as a mom to come alongside parents as a guide on the side. Because I'll tell you, parenting teens today, parenting in any capacity, is tough. It is hard.
How'd you come up with Dr. Nurse Mama? I mean, that does reveal your heart. I didn't know, by the way, when you were introduced in our staff devotions this morning, you're also an anti-human trafficking advocate, which shouldn't be surprising if you have a passion to see people made whole.
Yes.
You want to prevent the tragedy of human trafficking. But talk a little bit about some of the passions that you have and why you believe, and you did explain some of this to our staff this morning, why being a parent in 2023 is different. Now, I'm almost 65.
Uh-huh.
I was born in 1958. When I was raised, things were vastly different. Mm-hmm. And the parents who are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, they're facing a world that's almost unrecognizable.
They are. And, you know, for me, you're asking me where I'm coming from. And that's important for me to remember because you can look online and you can see all my credentials. And by the way, my credentials spell I need a new hobby, clearly, because that's what I love to do is learn. But, you know, that's where I am today. And where I started was actually the first woman in my family to get a university degree. And I didn't have a lot of support or confidence. I was actually a pretty poor student, graduated from an associate degree program, but just started to find my way in nursing. So I started there as a really not confident scholar. As a girl, I started up with unhealthy family relationships. You know, there was addiction that goes back through my family tree. And so I did not have a good relationship with my mom. And so becoming a mom myself, I didn't have a lot of confidence thinking, how am I going to do this if I don't have a model in that way? And now as a professor, I'm concerned about the state of research saying that we're facing a mental health crisis in teens. And I'm often asked, is it as bad as people are saying it is? And it's important to me as a nurse to give truthful, trustworthy answers. And I tell you, it's worse. It is worse than you can possibly imagine. I almost don't even recognize my practice. And then as a nurse practitioner, I am meeting families in a point of crisis they never saw coming behind closed doors. If you could just see the trove of trauma and the heartbreaking stories that I've heard from parents, they don't know what to do, especially families in homes of faith and Christian homes who feel like, oh my gosh, I have just failed. How did we arrive at this moment? Where do they see recovery from that? And then as a mom, I know the heartbreak of wanting to be a good parent, but just feeling like you're failing miserably. And parents everywhere are asking the question, am I messing my kids up for life? And so that's really where, you know, for me, arriving at Baylor University and being at a faith-based university allowed me to step out on this platform and see that God had given me the experience and the insight and the expertise, but also the heart to come alongside parents where they are.
Yeah. Tell us, in your opinion, where did the problems start? I mean, I've heard things, social media is a source of a problem. We hear a lot today from those in the transsexual community. You know, they go and they want to transit to another sex. And we hear a lot about it's a psychological problems. that lead to this. And unfortunately, the medical community is willing to go along with the desire to try to change. We have what I call manipulation surgery, all of those things going on. And it's happening, as you say, in some Christian homes as well. What are parents to do, for example, if they have a male, a son, who says, I feel like I want to be a female? And it's not far-fetched anymore.
Mm-mm. No, it's not. About 11% of Gen Z identifies as something other than gender conforming, what we know as male and female. And so that is something that parents are facing. And it's really easy to think about what you would do in the abstract and to talk about it in a positional kind of way. But when it comes to your home, all of a sudden, it's really different. And not only are kids facing gender issues, I mean, that's 11% of Gen Z. And parents, that strikes fear in the hearts of parents. But I'm seeing things that are much more common than that. And sometimes we let our fear blind us to things that are more common, like substance abuse, alcohol, marijuana, sexting, other risk-taking behaviors on social media. We can't miss the forest for the trees. So when we're looking at this generation, we have to own our own generational traumas. So we look back at the greatest generation, brave, valiant, right? But also did not know how to deal with the trauma that they had. So they were stoic, didn't talk about it. Then we had the silent generation, raised to be seen and not heard. Free love generation, who saw war making them, their parents and grandparents, emotionally inaccessible. So they just tried to, as a generation, tried to just feed themselves. Then that led to Gen X, who had parents who were absent, trying to heal their own hurts. And so they were the latchkey kids. And then that gave birth to millennials because their parents overcompensated. Now we have millennials who love their parents, but who are mocked for it. And then comes Gen Z. Digital natives, the world has never been safe. They were born after 9/11, and yes, born in the shadow of digital media and social media. We are not designed to live at the speed of a smartphone. The world's bad news is being dumped in their lap in an avalanche, and they are not developmentally or physically or psychologically prepared to process that. The other scary reality for parents is that social media makes parents replaceable. They don't like what you say. I can find an echo chamber in a second to validate my point of view. And that's not something that parents have faced before. They can go find somewhere else to live. They can find a way to make money. They can have a side hustle, and they don't need their parents' money. So this is a very different reality that we have. Now, Gen Z, the thing that makes them different is they're actually willing to talk about some of these things. And so sometimes we can be afraid to have conversation, but they really do want to have conversation, especially with grandparents who have a lot of time, and parents and other trusting adults in their life. We need to pursue relationship. We talked this morning in the staff meeting a lot about culture wars, which, you know, for me, I think instead of fighting against culture, which is important and has its place, but parents need to fight for the hearts of their teens.
Well, and the I was just reading from the Washington Post, I think, they were last week, I believe, talking about a recent study talking about girls who are being overwhelmed and are they're suicidal. They feel abandoned. There's all this stuff going on that we used to talk about sweeping things under the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting really thick under that carpet. I don't know how thick it is, but there is a lot going on that a lot of people don't see. But they will be able to depend on your podcast.
Yes.
To help them through making some of these decisions. I like what you said about grandparents. I'm a grandparent.
Yeah.
Want to be available for my grandkids as they grow up. All right. Dr. Jessica Peck, who is host of the Dr. Nurse Mama podcast on American Family Radio. Thank you. Appreciate it, Jessica.
I'll see you there. Thank you so much.
All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, Dr. Frank Harbor will be on. We're going to continue digging down and unpacking some of the things that are happening in our culture. We hope you'll join us.
What does the American Family Association stand for? AFA believes that all men and women, whether in private or public, should be free to exercise their faith without hindrance from the government. These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes. Stand by for news and commentary next.
Liberty University's K-12 Online Academy is the best of a homeschool, private school, and Bible-based education all rolled into one. With LUOA, you can take charge of your child's learning environment and create a structured yet flexible schedule that works for your family. Our qualified teachers are easily accessible for guidance and support along the way. And with new classes starting every Monday, it's never too late to make a switch to LUOA. To learn more, text LUOA to 88741. That's LUOA to 88741.
Only 39% of Americans say religion is very important in their lives. The findings of a new survey that shows patriotism and having children have also diminished in importance for Americans. That survey conducted by the University of Chicago and funded by the Wall Street Journal. 38% say patriotism is very important compared to 70% in 1998. Only 43% say marriage is important. The survey is something of a canary in the coal mine, a warning. Over the past two decades, the left has waged a fierce war on what it means to be an American. So why is the left waging war on our values? Well, God and country and family are at the heart of American exceptionalism. If you want to destroy America, you target our churches and our homes. Remember what President Reagan said, "All great change in America begins at the dinner table." I'm Todd Starnes.
The Lord looks down from heaven on all mankind to see if there are any who understand, any who seek God. Psalm 14, 2.
American Family Radio. This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back, everybody. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson. And folks, just want to let you know, if you want to watch us do this radio, we do have a live video stream. We don't have a podcast that has the video stream, but if you want to watch live, you can do that in two ways. You can go to Facebook and search for Today's Issues. That's the name of this program. And click through, and there's a little bit of a Facebook community for our show. You can interact with others who are watching, and we oftentimes will post stories that we're covering on our Facebook page. Or you can go to our own streaming platform, American Family Radio, American Family Association Streaming. That is streaming.afa.net, streaming.afa.net. Very easy to get an account there. You just simply sign up with your name and email address, and you can get not only access to a lot of the live streaming video programming, but you can watch a lot of the video that AFA has produced. So that's streaming.afa.net. Well, we just got through talking with Dr. Jessica Peck, who had an impressive resume, and now we have another impressive resume. Dr. Frank Harbor joins us. He was once a former skeptic of the Christian faith, but he came to Christ many years ago. He's the author of Sherlock's Faith, An Investigator's Guide to Christianity, and the book Prove It, Examining the Evidence of God's Existence. He's a pastor. He's a former professor and faculty member at Southwestern Theological Seminary. He's also a lawyer in his spare time. So, Frank, welcome to Today's Issues.
Glad to be back with you.
All right. So, Frank, kind of explain. Now, you talked to us, to our staff during devotion this morning. Also had a meeting with some of the leadership here at AFA. And you explained the lawyer angle, because you've had a lot that you've done in your career. But you have a particular focus in terms of your lawyerly work. Why don't you explain the organization you founded and what you guys have done?
Yes, I'm the president and chief legal counsel of Defending the Faith Alliance, and we defend the faith. We defend it in the Christian arena, apologetics, and we also defend it in the legal arena. So our primary, we defend the three C's. We defend Christ, Christians, and churches. And so we walk alongside churches and pastors. I'm a religious liberty attorney, so we have about 14 cases nationwide that I do, and then we have a church program called Church Shield, where we help churches protect themselves with their documents. We try to keep them out of court. We help them with their articles of incorporation, their bylaws. It's an amazing program. Facilities usage manuals, all kinds of stuff, because if you don't have things in writing about your faith, you're going to find yourself challenged in court. Mm-hmm. And so we are helping churches get all of their documents in order. We even help churches with the legacy program, help them get free wills for their members so they can leave a bequest. It's pretty interesting ministry.
Well, and a lot of folks are probably thinking, maybe not so much anymore, but I think probably still a substantial portion of the Christian community in America still does not see the dangers that we face. You're talking about the language of your bylaws, the facility usage policy in terms of who can host a wedding on the church property, the pronouns that are used when a church hires even a janitor. You know, we probably think it's a no-brainer that we can say what we want our pastoral staff to believe, but what about secretaries? So all this is actually being exploited by forces in our nation who want to muzzle the church and force them into compliance, right?
Yes. So the battle that we have is that in society, people want to make sexual orientation a protected class and make that stick all the way across the board. Well, the problem is it comes into a clash with the Bible, because the Bible tells us about sexuality. It tells us about biological sex, because God is the creator. He created everything. And so we learned that in the beginning, God created only two sexes, male and female. And that's at odds with what people are saying in the world, because people are saying, actually, your gender is what you say you are. Well, that doesn't always correspond with reality. And so, you know, new laws are being passed trying to enforce this. Well, you know, if you're a church, you know, you're going to affirm the biblical standard of marriage. You're going to affirm the biological sexes. And these things are under attack. And so we're already seeing that, you know, this kind of discrimination is getting people in trouble in the workplace. And, you know, the battle is going not only from restrooms, but to women's sports. I mean, this is broad, and it's trying to make its way into the church. So if we don't define ourselves, then we're going to find our territory encroached on. We were talking about in your staff meeting about adverse possession.
Yeah, explain that. That was fascinating.
Okay, well, a legal doctrine of adverse possession is this, that if you have a piece of property and your neighbor builds a fence onto your property and you don't do anything about it, after 10 years, he will own your property. And you say, God, that's a terrible thing. Well, it's the legal doctrine of adverse possession. Well, it's also very true in the spiritual world, because as Christians, if we don't defend our territory, we're going to find ourselves losing ground to where we won't even have a say with what's taking place in our churches. So, you know, churches, we think, well, you know, this is not happening in my church. Well, I tell you what, it is happening in churches. And so some of the legal cases that we're defending right now are pronoun cases where employees are being forced to use pronouns that aren't actually true, and which is forcing people to lie, which is obviously a sin in the Bible. But this is happening in churches. People are showing up at churches saying, these are my pronouns. I want you to call me by these things. And so the church actually shouldn't engage in this or be a part of it or bear false witness. We have to be messengers and representatives of the truth. We're salt, we're light, and we have to stand against this. And if we don't, we're going to face the doctrine of adverse possession, and pretty soon we're gonna lose what we have.
So I just want to understand, because I'm sure we have some pastors listening right now. Are you saying there should be documents that we have that have to spell out, here's what the Bible says about male and female only, so that if somebody comes into the church and says, I want to be a member of your church, but I want to be called they need documents to protect themselves. Here's our beliefs. I just want to be clear about that.
Yes.
If I'm a pastor listening, I'm very curious about this right now because I don't want to be hauled into court.
Yes. And that's what I do. It's called Church Shield. And we do the eight core documents of churches. You know, a lot of churches, they were founded 100 years ago and they had all this stuff and they're collecting dust somewhere. Pastor, if you're listening to me, you better dust those off and fix them, because if it's not just enough to say that we believe what the Bible has to say about marriage, because there's gay churches now, there's trans churches, there's all kinds of churches that don't even believe the Bible. They have different versions of the Bible now that don't even say that, you know, refer to God as masculine. So we have to define these things. We have to assume when we write these things that we're actually writing them for a second grader who doesn't understand. Because if you don't put these in your documents and you're sued as a church, you're going to be in trouble, because a lot of times we don't think bylaws are important. We have a saying as lawyers that bylaws don't matter until they matter.
Mm.
But once you've found yourself in a legal dilemma, it's too late to change those. You're locked in on what you have. So you have to be proactive. You have to change these in advance. You have to put marriage policies in place, not only in your bylaws and articles of incorporation, but you have to put them in your facilities usage manuals. You have to put them in every single document that's in the church. And a lot of churches don't have these documents, and they are at peril. For example, a wedding policy. If you don't have something in place that refers to your core documents about your statement of faith and your membership and the kind of weddings that you'll perform, you're at risk. And not only that, but if you don't have the stuff in place about sexuality, that you only believe that there are two biological sexes and that they're unchanging, you could be in trouble. You could have somebody show up at your church and say, we want to get married. Perhaps it's two men. And you say, I'm sorry, we don't do same-sex marriages at this church. If you say that, you better have the policy in writing. But what if one of them then says, well, that's okay, I identify today as a woman. Okay, what are you going to do? Do you have a policy in place that refutes that or keeps you safe from that? If you don't, you can very well find yourself in court. So we have to be proactive about this. We have to put these things in place. Our world is changing. This is not the same world that we lived in the 50s and 60s. The church has to be prepared for the assault that's already taking place. And I know that many people listening, I was just looking at the amazing American Family Radio map of all the places that you're on, incredible places. We need another antenna in Dallas. So if everybody's listening in Dallas, we need one on the west side. So I'm here for all the Texans today to lobby to get us another antenna over there. But you may be thinking, well, this has never happened in my small town. Let me tell you something. It's already happening in our schools. It's happening in employment law, and it is coming to a church near you soon.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, and I want to come back to this marriage issue, and then I want to also ask you about, like, Christian schools, the dangers facing them. But I'm sure there's some people listening who are going, okay, tell me where to go to find out about Church Shield. So let's get we will allow you to tell this several times, so folks who are just tuning in. So people are listening, they're going, well, we need that at our church. Where do they go?
They go to defendingthefaith.law, and there they can give that information to your pastor. You can sign up. It's very inexpensive. It's like having legal insurance. It's $100 a month. We do all your documents. And when a church signs up, everybody in the church can get a free will, which is kind of incredible because it takes $1,000 to get a will. But we do those for everybody in that church, unlimited amount of time. So we're excited about it, and we protect churches. So they can find that out there, and you can sign up online.
Defendingthefaith.law.
Yes.
All right, folks, don't put .com or .net. Defendingthefaith.law. To get more of this information. Again, we're talking with Dr. Frank Harbor, who formerly was an atheist, but is now a Christian and defends the faith. So, Frank, let me ask you about churches, because I remember I get years mixed up. So I don't know if this is the late 90s or early 2000s, but there was a United Methodist Church in New Jersey, I believe. I want to think of Ocean City or something like that. And they had a beautiful boardwalk area where they allowed people to rent to perform, have weddings. It was overlooking the seashore. It was very popular. This was before the United Methodist Church went crazy and its leadership became overwhelmingly accepting of what the Bible says is sin. But this church was sued. So anybody who wanted to rent the facility, as long as there was an availability on the calendar, they could do that. Well, this church said no. I think it was two lesbians who wanted to have a civil ceremony performed there. This was before Obergefell decision legalizing homosexual marriage. And the church said no, and they were sued, and they lost because their policy was open to everyone. So for churches out there who allow their facilities, some churches, especially the larger churches, are beautiful inside. People want that church setting. They want the beauty of that sanctuary. If churches have a policy that allows people outside the church to rent the facility, they're in danger, right? I mean, you can't discriminate against same-sex couples if you've opened it up to the general public, can you?
Yeah, it's a slippery slope, and it's, scope creep. So you have to be very careful about that. And that's why, like our churches, we have them send us all their documents, and we do a comprehensive review to see where they're vulnerable. Because, the issue is not, will you get sued? You probably will at some point. The question is, can you win? And you have to be covered by your documents. And that's one of the neat things about our Church Shield is if you're sued on our documents, we're going to defend you for free. Pro bono.
Okay. And then one other thing, and then I'll let Fred back in here. I know he's itching to get back. Christian schools. So for decades and decades and decades, Christian schools often operated independently of churches. So you have a Christian school. This is the way we do things. And in the 2000s, they started coming under pressure. First with people who are not teaching in a religious context, your history teacher, your football coach, your secretary, your janitor, okay? The pressure began to build, well, these people are not teaching your religion, so you have to open up employment to people who are LGBTQ. Is that a real threat? And what should Christian schools do? Do they need to get under the umbrella of a church? How would you advise? I know this is not necessarily what you guys do since you work with churches. What is your the simplest form, your suggestion to them?
Well, my thing is that you need to get, things in writing about your core beliefs and have every employee under that. And this actually goes toward churches too, because churches employ people that aren't necessarily on the ministerial staff and are not necessarily under the ministerial exception, which is a big legal doctrine. And so, for example, a church, you hire a janitor, they need to sign on acknowledging your statement of faith. You say, well, what does that have to do, or people in Maine, what does that have to do with our church? Well, we keep our bathrooms clean for the glory of God. We mow our grass for the glory of God. And so everything that we do as far as our organizations reflects on our mission, and people need to be brought under that mission, because otherwise we're just parsing out things, saying, no, well, you know, this part here is secular. It's really just a secular part of the church. And so we need to guard against that by saying, no, this is a comprehensive mission. And just the adjective that you use, we're not just a school, we're a Christian school.
Right.
And that touches every single part of our mission and organization and personnel.
Right.
Because if you work for us, you in some ways, you're representing us. And then so it's an important thing to stand on as an ecclesiastical doctrine. But yes, you know, being tied to a church is an advantage there.
Okay.
All right, I want to present another scenario to you, because I think we probably have people listening who are experiencing this in real life. I work for a major corporation. I've been there for 20 years. And all of a sudden, the human resources department at this big corporation, whatever it is, they've changed their policy. They say now if a fellow employee wants to be identified as a them or a they, a fellow employee's, you've known this guy for years. All of a sudden he comes to work some morning. He says, I want to identify as a she. The human resources has a new policy saying, you don't have a choice, Fred, the Christian employee. You've got now to identify this person as a she and treat him as a she. And if you don't use his preferred pronoun, your job may be in jeopardy. Do I have any legal right to say you can't make me do that, or am I out?
No. So here's what you need to do. And if somebody finds themselves in that situation, you need to contact us, and we'll help you. We have several cases like this right now on pronoun cases that involve some really big corporations that all of our listeners would know immediately if I started saying them. So what needs to be done in this situation is when this goes in place, you need to immediately file for a religious exemption. And that's why it's good to call us, so, because we will professionally write this thing. We will not charge you. You call in, we'll help you pro bono. So just give us a call. But in that, you need to lay out the theological reasoning for why you're not going to do that. You don't just say, well, I'm not going to do that because I don't like it. Well, you're going to say, as a Christian, I believe this violates my faith, because the Bible commands us, one of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not bear false witness, thou shalt not lie. And so by doing this, would you be participating in somebody else's lie by calling them a biological sex that they're actually not? Well, many Christians have prayed about this, and they feel like they don't want to be a part of that. And not only that, but they worked for this corporation 10 years ago, and it wasn't in their job description to lie. And so now all of a sudden, you're putting in my job description, I have to lie. And so the first phase of this, Fred, is that we're going to file for a religious exemption. Now, does that mean they're going to grant it? Maybe not. But if they don't, then all of a sudden, we have taken this issue and we've made it a religious liberty issue. And we've preserved their legal rights if we have to end up suing these people. But you know, if you don't file for that exemption, and you can find yourself in hot water. So we have several people in the spectrum right now. We have people that they've been written up more than once for this. And now we've come in and we've written these exemptions, and pretty much everybody that we've done this for, they've not written them up again, because if they did, we would take legal action on them. Now we also have one big corporation. I'm not going to say their name on the radio, but they didn't grant our religious exemption in writing, but they did make an accommodation where our person is actually not being forced to lie. So anyway, there's some things that we can work out with the employers that keep the Christian in good standing with the Lord, which is actually more important than being in good standing with the employer.
Yeah. By the way, if you want more information about how you can protect your church, your school, or some of the things that Dr. Frank Harbor has been talking about in terms of your employment, even at a big corporation, you can go to defendingthefaith.com. defendingthefaith.law. Don't forget that at the end, defendingthefaith.law, to get more information or to get in contact with this ministry, an organization. Frank, we're getting close to the end of the program. We talked about, you met with some of the leadership here at AFA this morning, and we talked a great deal about the complacency of the Christian church in America, because we've had it so good in this country, not only the liberties and freedoms, but the safety from bizarre ideologies and the spiritual warfare that has, you know, frankly, enveloped Christians in many other nations for different reasons. In China, you're facing a communist regime, or in North Korea, in places like Iran, even Saudi Arabia, you're facing a Islamic regime that attempts to crush religious liberty. Here, we have a secular battle that's going on with some of these ideologies. So I'm just going to give you a second to you get several minutes if you want, to just speak to Christians and encourage them about preparing themselves for the battles to come, but also to encourage them not to be afraid, because we still have a constitution. As long as we can fight for it and keep it, we do have organizations like your own, but we also have a promise from God that he'll be with us as we stand and be faithful for the faith.
Yeah. I mean, this has all happened before. It happened a long time ago in the book of Daniel. And the kingdom was Babylon, and they passed a law because they couldn't find anything wrong with Daniel. So they decided to pass a law against his faith that you couldn't pray. And it was interesting because the penalty was death. And what we know about this interesting story in the Bible is that they passed this law, but only one person was arrested. It was a targeted law. And what we're seeing more and more in our country is we're seeing laws that are being targeted against people of faith. And, you know, one of the things that happens when that does happen is whenever people target these laws like that, it hurts innocent people. You know, in the story of Daniel in the lion's den, ultimately the king finds out that he signed the law that passed. I mean, he was paying so little attention. He actually signed the law that passed. He was upset about it after it got passed. And innocent people got killed. It said these men who thought up this law, they were punished, but also their wives and their children. Well, I'll tell you, anytime people pass laws targeting religion, like some of the ones that we're seeing, innocent people suffer. And what we're seeing in our country is that we're coming to a place where bathrooms are becoming scary places, not places of privacy anymore. We're seeing where women's sports are being invaded by people who aren't women. And innocent people are getting hurt by some of these targeted laws. I think about the king of Babylon, who when he saw this happen, he tried to do everything that he could to reverse it, and he couldn't, because it was passed by the laws of the Medes and the Persians, and it was an irrevocable law. And so the moral of the story is this: that don't let bad laws pass in the first place. And as Christians, we have to be vigilant. We got to do something now, not after it passes.
Amen. All right, our guest has been Dr. Frank Harbor. Folks, if you want to learn more about what his ministry does in terms of protecting Christians and the Christian faith and churches, please visit defendingthefaith.law, defendingthefaith.law, and get in contact with them. Get your church covered, your church protected, and also you'll find resources there about maybe your own upcoming battles. And Frank, thank you so much for being on with
us.
All right, folks, we're going to take a five-minute break for news. When we come back, Steve Jordahl will join us. You know you love Steve. We'll see what kind of shirt he's wearing, at the very least. 5 minutes for news. We'll be right back. Hope you join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.